Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Baby, 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 I am brown baby, I am brown baby, I am brown baby, I am, baby. I am.
Welcome to the Brown Baby Podcast. I'm your host, Nikesh Shukla. I'm the author of the memoir, Brown Baby, a memoir of race, family and home. Brown Baby Podcast is a parenting podcast that asks the question, how do we raise our kids to be joyful in a bleak world that we're so sad and angry about? Through these conversations, we can navigate tricky issues that we need to think about with our kids, like racism, sexism, climate change, mental health and more. This is season 1, episode 16 of the podcast, Josie Long and rom-com starring Christian Bale. It's the season finale. We've had 16 ace episodes of parenting chat with some brilliant writers, musicians, chefs, comedians and more. I set out to do this podcast as a way of carrying on the conversations I started in my memoir. So along the way, I have talked to Nadia Hussein about the power of food and family, Max Porter about checking your ego as a parent, Mira Sayal about legacy and racism, Himesh Patel about the weird period of new dadness, Kortje Newland, Kelechi Okafor, Derek A. Bardawell, Emmy the Great, Anushka Shankar, so many brilliant guests along the way, and the response has been phenomenal. I have been inundated with messages from people thankful for me making space for people to have these conversations. As a writer, I found myself working on things that don't yet exist that I would have really benefited from at a specific time in my life, in the hope that I'll catch those who need this space being made now. So thank you for all your love. So this final episode of season 1 is a rambling one with a very dear, dear friend. It's Josie Long, a stand-up comedian, writer and activist. Her last Edinburgh show was Tender, which is amazing. You can find a stand-up of hers on Amazon Prime, and she's on Instagram and Twitter as at Josie Long. She is just one of the best people I know. She is such a brilliant, good-hearted person who has changed my life for the better. And this conversation is representative of our friendship. I work my way through some difficult thoughts, and Josie replies with positivity, wisdom, jokes, and sense. I love talking to her, and this is tantamount to a phone chat between us. We talk about climate change, getting angry on the internet at the bleakness of the world, why Christian Bale has never been in a rom-com, and the marketplace of ideas. But before we get to the podcast, look, it's free, okay? And we will be back for season 2, more of that at the end. But because this is free and I book the guests, edit, record, promote it all by myself, I'd love some support. Either you can support by heading to my bookshop.org affiliate link in the show notes and buying my memoir Brown Baby, or one of the books from one of the other previous guests, or just any bookshop that is where you get your books. You know, if it's more convenient for you to go to your local independent bookshop or to a chain like Waterstones or Foyles, then go there, or to another website of your choice. It's not for me to judge, but please do buy my book and support the books of the previous guests, or you can chuck me some money through the Acast supporter feature, or you can just shout about the podcast on the internet. Look, I know these sorts of presenter pleas are always in every single podcast, but you know, reading releasing a book in a pandemic is hard, and now that the bookshops are open, I really want to sell copies of the memoir. So please head to wherever you get your books and buy that book. Okay, Josie Long, season finale of the Brown Baby Podcast, season 1, let's go. But welcome to the show, Josie Long.
Hello, it's so nice to be here.
This is very strange, doing a recorded conversation of a chat we'd probably just have anyway.
Yeah, And also, I've just heard through the window, my partner Johnny has decided to start playing the guitar, which is completely unhelpful. So he's got a Zoom gig.
He's trying to muscle in on that PRS on our podcast. welcome to the Brown Baby Podcast. Dangerously, because we're pals, I have done no preparation for this.
I would feel insulted if you were like, so in 2014, you know, I'd be like, no, mate.
Yeah, your second Edinburgh show mentioned a baby. Was this a foreshadowing of your... Yeah, no.
I have my coffee as well, which I are you using the video of this or just the audio?
No, just the audio. Audio.
Thank God. Because, you know, I did a podcast the other week and they literally, halfway through, I was like, oh, you're putting this video out and I am not wearing any suitable items of clothing. that's my new podcast self. Just, hey, loosh.
What I love about this is we do need to record a little bit video bit at the end, and the decision about whether you will continue to be wearing your daughter's headphones will be an interesting one.
I'm wearing her bobble hat now. I'll make it better. I'll get one of her tiny horses.
So I wanted to chat to you, I guess, weirdly, because the reason I did no prep is because you ended up being a character in this memoir, and by character in a memoir, that's already a weird thing to say because you are a real person in a real person's book about their real life.
I was both like so flattered and so excited, and also I feel like it's a moment in the book where like I just come across like a real dick, like you're really nervous and about to go on stage and I'm just like, hi, I just need to distract you at a really key time in something really important. I'm just going to drop a really heavy bomb on you now. Okay, bye, mate. I'm like, this prick.
There was definitely like, if anyone had seen me on stage at that time, there would have been that slow close-up and like, hello, darkness, my old friend.
Which is brutal. I definitely did not appreciate what I was kind of... No, I think I did, but not enough. Like, you know when one sends a message that's like, oh, this is some really heavy stuff. And then at the very end, I think I put like, sorry, this is probably a bit heavy.
yeah. Here's some heavy shit. Oh no, I need to undercut it. Actually, no need to deal with this now. It's not an emergency.
No worries if not. Just, I mean, yeah. We, I think I've definitely sought your advice as because you are a parent of two daughters, and you've been in the parenting game longer than me. So I do look up to you and your wife a lot. Like we, when we went to a cottage for New Year's, and I remember your wife, there was like half hour before bedtime. And obviously when you're like away, there's not the toys and books and resources of normal house. And she was like, right, what am I going to do? And she got a cookbook and she was like, who wants to look at some pictures of delicious food? And I was like in awe of her. I was like, this is the parenting I dream of. Like, just, I was just so amazed of like the ingenuity of it.
The reason I kind of put that anecdote in the book is because I guess both of us have those types of lives where you have a really deep and meaningful conversation about 5 seconds before you then have to go and stand in front of lots of people and like present yourself as something else. But also, yeah. I also feel like we probably have the same sorts of response mechanisms to things that we both find overwhelming, right? And yeah. You know, so much of the book and so much of this podcast is me trying to like work out how to raise my kids with joy in bleak times. I know that Biden is president elect, but that hasn't fixed the whole fucking world, you know? Like,
yeah, and also like we were very much rooting against Trump. It's not like we were desperate for what Biden was offering. Yeah. You know, it's not like we're like, well, thank God he's got all the guys from Uber and Amazon on the case. We'll all be fine, you know? Like,
yeah. The world seems so much brighter. People were tweeting the next day. And I just thought, oh, God, yeah, we're going to have a difficult conversation about these people's politics. But anyway, this isn't a political podcast. I guess that, sure. I think we both kind of have that response mechanism when we get overwhelmed with like stuff that feels bigger than us. Like I certainly, yeah. I panic and I reach for the people who I don't necessarily want them to come back with a solution. I want them to come back and go, yeah, I know it's fucked up, isn't it?
To understand and to know that people you trust also get it.
Yeah,
that's important.
Have you, random reference, but have you ever seen the film White Men Can't Jump?
Yes, a long time ago though. But
There's a scene in it that has just stayed with me for years when Rosie Perez and Woody Harrelson are lying in bed and she goes, "I'm thirsty." So he goes and gets her a glass of water in that classic way that men need to fix women's problems. And she's like, "I didn't want you to get me a glass of water." And he was like, "But you said you're thirsty." And she's like, "No, I wanted you to empathize with me. I wanted you to understand me and say, I feel your thirst." And I was watching that going, yeah, I get you, Rosie Perez. Like, this is
what I want, though, is I do want all those things, but I also want them to get their glass of water. You know, is that too much to ask? Like, I'd be so, if I said to Johnny, I'm really thirsty, and he said, I get it. Like, get me a fucking glass of water. I think it's, yeah, I do think because I carried the child and gave birth to the child and breastfed the child, our daughter, for the first sort of 14 months, I do feel really like I still have a lot of like, you will get me a glass of water. Left. But yeah, sorry, it's about, yeah, feeling less alone in hard circumstances. And I also think that's like the key to surviving hard circumstances, no matter what, is like fellowship and friendship and community and all those things.
Yeah, because also at the same time, like when people offer you advice, that advice is always very specific to their very specific child. And I'm a firm believer in children, like people are individuals. We're all individual snowflakes and all the rest of it. So what worked for your kid isn't necessarily going to work for mine. But what I can give you is solidarity because I've been in a similar circumstance. And that I feel like that's probably much more useful.
Yeah. And I think with parenting as well, it's so great to have someone who can go, okay, this seems massive and I have no doubt that it feels massive and I'm not diminishing that, but I promise you this is not life or death. And you go, yeah. Oh, thank God. Yes, okay.
Which brings us to the bit in the book where I talk about a conversation we had where it literally was life or death because...
Yeah.
So I think a Sunday afternoon and I was in the green room at South Bank Centre. I was doing like a teenagers event. And as I was being mic'd up, you phoned me and said, or you left me a voice note. I can't remember. Like, and you were like,
I think I rang you and I think you did pick up and I think you were a bit like, you were nice. You chatted to me for a minute. And then you were like, I am actually a bit busy. I'm doing this thing. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, because you were like, I just feel really irresponsible for bringing a child into the world. Like, I've been reading up about climate catastrophe, and I was like, no, don't read about it.
And I think as well, your gig was, to, like you say in the book, it's about kind of inspiring young people. So then you have to be on stage and be like, you guys have got 20 more years of this shit on me, bye!
Yeah, but, I took the call because it was like, it was early on and I thought if Josie's calling, she either wants to like celebrate something or shit just got real. So like, obviously I'll take this call. And shit had got very real because you were like, I think you know, in that sort of weird sleep deprived stage where people get to, things like I definitely thought at times at early stages, I'm just never going to sleep again. I'm never going to fall asleep ever again. This is just my life. I'm going to be like that Christian Bale film.
The thing is, pretty much any Christian Bale film, you're like, well, I wouldn't want to be that. Yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
He has played a cadre of pricks, hasn't he?
Yeah. In fact, there's no fluffy Bale.
Yeah, that's true. He's never done rom-com, has he? He's never been a love interest.
Can you imagine? Do you have this is the thing I have, which is I can't forgive actors for their past roles. So, like, if he was in a rom-com now, I would just be screaming at the screen, "It's American Fucking Psycho!" It wouldn't get forgiven.
It's Batman! It's Batman!
Well, here's another thing. Don't trust Batman because he's American fucking psycho.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he does fight crime like he is Patrick Bateman.
Well, it's the two paths that the billionaire can go.
Yeah, I can either do loads of drugs and kill people for fun, or I could do no drugs and kill people because I'm haunted by the emptiness at the core of my existence.
And I took the path less travelled.
Yeah,
but so I rang you and I was freaking out about the climate crisis, and hang on, I'm gonna refer to the text.
what's interesting about it, what is interesting about this, just as like a little bit of fourth wall breaking of quite a meta memoir anyway, it's like I've transcribed our conversation as I remembered it like 3 years after it happened or 2 years after it happened. And you might have read it and gone, I don't remember A, this happening, or B, I never would have said that. So it's like an interesting imperfection already in memoir writing, I think.
I think this is not verbatim what I would say, because obviously what I would say, there'd be a laugh a minute, you know. I feel so guilty today. I think what's good about this is it does have my normal rate of apologising per paragraph, which is very important. That's my hobby, is apologising. But no, it does seem pretty faithful, and I do remember it. I remember that conversation, and I remember it was very helpful because I think this is a conversation we've had back and forth over the years about climate change as well. Because I think it's one of these things that it's never going to be solved. It's never going to go away. It's never going to be something that we don't have to worry about again. So just like that, every now and again, it's just going to rear up and be put into focus by a new thing, or just seem frightening in the context of, like, now thinking of my daughter and then being like, oh, she'll be 15 in 10 years, in 13 years. 10 years. She'll be 15 in 13 years. That is simple maths. And thinking of, oh gosh, the climate crisis in the context of her as an adolescent, blah, blah, blah. Like, we're always going to have to contend with this.
Yeah. And it boggles my mind a little bit to imagine what their future is going to be, and how, you know, I guess we've sort of seen it in 2020, and this will be out in 2021, that we've seen it in 2020 that, like, you know, a lot of people who aren't anti-mask and anti-vaccinations are able to adapt to new circumstances, and it takes a little bit of time. And yeah, it's not ideal, but it's for, you know, the greater good and stuff. And so I have been wondering this year, watching the slow rate of substantial change happening with how people live their lives, like whether we will go back, whether this will just be the start of a new dawn of how we look at our lives. And I guess, you know, when you, like, I think films and TV programs and books just always make you feel like there will be one single cataclysmic event and it will change the path of everything forever, whereas actually the truth will be it will be gradual and weird, like March to September was, and then in September we sort of got the hang of it a little bit, and then,
well, it's how we're dealing with the seasons now. All of us who are our age are always a little bit like, oh, it's cold for this time of year, it's warm for this time of year. We all know that it's not quite right all the time.
Yeah.
It just does not feel like the planet we grew up on already.
Yeah, and also...
No, go on. No, I was just going to say, like, I vary in my strategies for coping with it, because I think, like, I like Greta Thunberg, the way she speaks about it, and she's kind of like, there's never going to be a time when it's not worth fighting for this, even if it's incremental, even if it's small, even if it feels hopeless, even if it literally is hopeless, it's still worth doing the work and it's still important to fight. And any changes that are possible will be beneficial. And I think that's really important. But I also think we'd like, I do sometimes do mental exercises in pessimism so that I can say to myself, do you know what? Like, the most important thing for me is human beings being humane and kind to each other and enjoying their lives as best they can. Yeah. And like, I was thinking a lot recently about how a lot of the worst case scenario things, like you say, the ideas of like cataclysmic events, if I sit there and think about it, I'm like, oh God, imagine living in a desert that was overheating. And I'm like, people are already doing that. Imagine having to live on a toxic waste dump. People are already doing that. And like, imagine, you know, not having proper food. People are already doing that. And like, not to sugarcoat things that are horrific, but I have to be reminded that human beings are like so powerfully resilient. And if there are things that are out of our control that do get worse, we will still find joy and love and happiness in it. And I do think life is always better than not life. I just read a book that I think you would really love, in like very much in tandem with your book, actually, called something. It's by Tom Wyman, but he just sent it to me. It just said book proofs.
Tom Wyman.
He's a philosopher. I think it's called An Infinite Source of Hope, Infinitely Full of Hope. But he talks about how there are these philosophers who are like, no one should have kids because of the planet. And their philosophy boils down to pain always outweighs happiness, and suffering is always worse than pain, than happiness, and therefore humanity should not bother. And I'm like, you guys just haven't lived. Like, literally, a rightly timed chocolate bar outweighs all like sadnesses of my life.
But also, like, but pain for who? That, you know, that's
what do you mean?
Like, I always think it's very easy for the moral philosophers of our time, the Jordan Petersons of our time, to go, you know, pain and suffering is the way forward and we just have to get used to it. And then I just think, your insane meat diet aside, like, what pain and suffering have you had, you know?
That prick's life was so easy. He had to bring himself to the point of massive illness by eating only raw beef and salt.
It's bonkers. And the thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently is how much time I waste worrying about the people who waste their time getting angry about how people self-identify. You know, the people who are like, he's got pronouns in their bio, what prick, and they get so
we know they're not to be trusted,
and they get so angry about strangers on the internet who like, and I know this is a facile comparison, but you know, if you ever met someone called, like, Nicholas, and you go, all right, Nick, and they're like, no, it's Nicholas, not Nick, it's just Nicholas. You'd just go, all right, Nicholas. You know, you'd sort of respect it and maybe, like, talk about them behind their back. But people on Twitter get so angry about it. And I find myself getting angry about them because I guess this is the thing. That anger for me feels controllable. I can control anger at like idiots on the internet, whereas I can't control my anger at how fucked the planet is. That to me feels too big. And so like,
that's so interesting.
And I worry that like, I feel so angry about things at the moment that I've just got to find ways that it can come out that I can
appropriate
manage.
Outlets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think climate change, our generation will bear it and compute it in different ways to people 10 years younger, people 10 years younger than that. And in some ways, I feel that my daughter is in a position that means that she will approach it differently to me. She won't be going, she'll be going, right, okay, here we all are. We're here. This is where we are. This is what we're doing. And I think we're in this very weird place of like, one foot in each camp. Yeah. The people older than us don't take it seriously on the whole. Obviously, some people really do. And people younger than us are stuck with it more. And we remember when people didn't. And we remember when things were different as well. Like, we lived pre-internet.
Yeah, we are a weird crossover generation because we remember pre-internet. We were at school. Because you're a couple of years younger than me. We're sorry, 10, 15 years younger than me.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't get this conversation because I'm Gen Z.
But we remember our peers as teenagers using gay as an insult and it being, you know, not long.
Well, Section 28.
Yeah, yeah, not long.
Our generation was fucked over by Section 28.
And you know, all of that stuff that we remember the world being fundamentally different. But for me, there wasn't like a switch on where suddenly you realized how much our lives are dictated by the internet now, and how, so like remembering how different the world was, like I don't remember like this cataclysmic shift. It all just felt quite gradual and normalized, and and so that's what's really worried me about, you know, the last 4 years, where you kind of see this slide backwards towards the fascist end of right-wing values. How normal it is, and
everything's in relation to our children, because we're thinking about the world for them and we're worrying for them.
But you know, people are always like, oh well, you know, like you live in a bubble on Twitter, that's not real life. But I often think that actually agendas are set on Twitter and then pulled out into the wider world, and so actually Twitter is very influential in setting the news agenda.
Also, I wish I lived in a fucking bubble on Twitter. I wish nobody bothered me. I wish I only saw people I like. If people think that I live in a bubble on the internet, like the internet is the place I have been, real life is beautiful compared to the internet. I don't know. That's probably a bit of a silly thing to say, but you know what I'm saying. I think I have things that I'm frightened of, and I have things that sometimes I feel pessimistic about. And I often have to think to myself, like, even when I can't be optimistic, I can still be positive about people and hopeful about people in general. So even when I do think, okay, we have collectively as a species fucked it, it's worse than it was, I always still manage to go, but I don't know what people are going to come up with. And I trust human nature, and I trust being around other people, and I trust the wonderful buoyancy that is each new generation and their ideas.
So
that's how I keep myself optimistic.
Yeah, and that's really lovely. And I guess when it comes to how you raise your kid, because like me, you will have had the same thing where you like you look at your phone to kind of alleviate you from the drudgery of childcare. And then on your phone, people are either telling you how amazing you are or calling you whatever.
Horrific shit.
And then you then go, why am I doing this? I need to pull myself back into the room. And then you're in the room, but then you've got the stuff that's going on your phone in your head. And that switch between the two things is something that I've always really struggled with. Like, is you know, this thing that I'm constantly trying to work on is like how to be present, but also... And I guess have a healthier relationship with social media.
But also you want to be present, but you also want to be real about the world, about the nature of the world. Yes, I really remember two instances. One, when my baby was tiny and I was playing her Happy by Pharrell Williams, because it is on a list of baby bangers. She loves it. She loved it. She doesn't now. She's a different person now. But I used to play
like,
that.
Like the song Get Lucky, it does exactly what it says in the song title.
I love it. But I played Happy for her and I was trying to cheer her up and dancing around as she was stopping crying, and at the same time absentmindedly I was reading a news article on my phone about the melting permafrost. And I really remember in that moment like having to try and sustain outwardly the veneer of being fun, and inwardly my whole being was just collapsing because I was like, oh my God, like this is the truth. And I think the thing that I'm finding hard to bear, and I worry that I'm going to be a shit mum in the future, is that I am so disillusioned with politicians. I am so completely without faith in the systems that we have to govern us. and the people who are supposed to be dealing with these problems. And so I worry that I'm just going to end up this like miserable person who's like, they're all the same, they've ruined it. And my daughter will be like, we've got to try and do something. But then the second time is, I remember sitting on this carpet here, I was playing with my daughter, and exactly, I took a cheeky look at the phone because it was locked down and I was just so all over the shop, I was panicking, and somebody was being rude to me, and I was so incensed by it, it like flared me up. And even though I thought I was suppressing that feeling, my daughter was just looking at me really freaked out, because to her, we'd been playing, I looked away, suddenly I was in a different mood. Terrifying. And that was what really made me feel like, oh.
It's only recently, as my kids have got older, that things have got less immediate to them. They're able to pinpoint emotions because of things that might have happened in the past. Whereas, like, when wow. they're quite young, like, everything is in the moment. So if you're playing, you look at a text message where someone says, or, like, a notification where someone says something horrible to you, and that changes your mood. Like, they don't understand that outside of the concept, out of the context of the present, their present day, or that present moment, sorry. But you know, you and your partner are both comedians, and there's something about play that, you know, there's something about play that I guess is so ingrained into both of your styles of comedy. And so I wonder if you like how much of that play goes into like when you're with your kids, because
I think a lot of it, you know. You guys are playful. I've seen you guys be playful parents as well. I think it just brings out the kid in everyone a bit. Like, definitely, I do playful stuff with her all the time. I love doing voices. I love doing characters. I love just seeing where it takes us and responding to her stuff. I have recently got into, while she's falling asleep, making her up stories. Partly just because I want to see almost how boring I can make them. like it will literally be because she wants to hear stories about Peppa Pig. So I'll be like, Peppa asked Mummy if she could have a biscuit. Mummy, can I have a biscuit, please? You'll have to ask Daddy Pig. So Peppa went to ask Daddy Pig. And that will last for like 10 minutes of like nothing. And I just want to see, like, yeah, I play a lot for myself with it. Yeah, I find that having my daughter really does encourage a certain type of playfulness and a certain. So for me, I just found out I have ADHD, which, pardon me, makes so much sense in so many other aspects of my life. But most often with my daughter, I find it almost easier to be very present because I do love her so much and it's so instantly playful and rewarding that it just, my brain's like, great, I'm in. So it is quite good. Here's the thing. I don't know, but this is dragging us out of a nice space into a scary one. I don't know how I'm going to talk to my daughter about climate change. And this is something you've like thought of and addressed. And like, is it something you've started so far?
Yeah. There are loads of really good books about it. And, you know, there's been a couple of ones that we've got recently where animals have to come and live in my house or like in the narrator's house because of things that have happened in their homeland. Well, I think one of them is specifically a refugee allegory and the other one is a climate change allegory. And and both of them at the end have like really, really practical things that, you know, your kid can do. And also the messaging is there for my eldest kid at school, so she brings that back into the house and she kind of monitors how we are in the house. And so I think they are both aware of it, but they're aware of it in a safe way. Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't know the full horror of it because I guess they haven't quite conceptualized the world, a world bigger than this house or bigger than our part of the city that we live in, bigger than our, you know, for them, London, where you know, my family is, it feels like another world. It feels like another country. Like, for them, when I go to London, it could be, the, you know, as the same as like when I've had to go to India or to America for various things. Yeah. And because they don't have that sense of scale, I think, it, you know, the stuff that we do about, you know, switching lights off when we're not using things and trying to reuse things as much as we can and recycling and all the rest of it, that is like the safe way of doing it, but they haven't got to the really scary stuff yet.
Do you know what does make me sad is I've suddenly, watching Peppa Pig reminded me that my mum used to faithfully recycle all her bottles at the bottle bank. We used to go down to the bottle bank and recycle all the bottles. And like there were definitely at my primary school when I was a kid, there were displays about the greenhouse effect and about ecology. And it does truly, truly break my heart to think about all of that missed opportunity from government, that actually people on the ground, not so much as in the past 5 years, but, you know, for a good 30 years, people on the ground have been like, we've got to save the planet, you know. And it, I think what's hardest for our generation is bearing all of that knowledge of, like, as we were growing up and as we came of age, we were being so catastrophically let down by the world. But and so at least, like, for them, the damage is done.
Yeah, well, the weird thing is, like...
No, that's not what I feel.
The weird thing is, like, we learnt about the greenhouse effect in school. Like, when was I learning about it? Like, 1990, 1991 or something. We learnt about it, like, over 20 years ago. 30 years ago.
Do you know what? Do you know what I think fucked us up? You know there was the hole in the ozone layer and they fixed it? I reckon everyone else was just like, great, that's that sorted. Like, lots of people were acted like that.
This is where I think, like, you know, there is climate catastrophe and there's environmental racism as well, because, like, the problems were just moved out of the UK, like, the outsourcing that went to different parts of the world and, like, how that mass production and those factories and stuff and all of that.
And literally shipping rubbish and recycling away.
Yeah. And so it's literally like, you know, we've been thinking about this stuff for like 30 years and it's probably our peers, like people I went to school with who are like fucking climate change deniers and working in government to... Hold on. This happens every single night.
They know.
Someone goes past my window just listening to music on their phone.
What?
No headphones. And I've never seen them, but it's like a weird...
That's a very regular but very antisocial person.
Yeah.
Like, they keep habits, but they can't keep quiet. There's people... I live by the canal, well, the river technically, but there's people who cycle up and down with what I like to call the mobile disco, where they play, like, such loud music. And they just spend all day, like, on it in that way. It's a lifestyle I'll never understand.
Yeah, there's a guy who... Because I live in Bristol, there's an ex-raver who does a lot of Deliveroo who has, like, a mobile disco on his Deliveroo bike and it's playing whatever time he's delivering.
I respect it. I do.
And the thing is, like, he's in a city, so he probably is just, like... It's just city living. But like when your neighbour's getting a pizza at 11 p.m. at night there's a rave outside your window, you're like, dude, come on. I can't remember what I was saying. I was basically like, I just feel like we've been talking about climate change for so fucking long that to the realisation that we pushed it past the point of no return, even with knowing what we knew, and even to be honest, probably being complicit in a way that we didn't understand, because, like, as you know, convenience has, like, contributed so much to this, right? Like the ability to have, like, quickly made up t-shirts of your favorite bands and they'd be like £2 and in Primark and stuff like that, and like whatever, like, you know, how everything...
I know, yeah.
You know, you want a fucking mango in December, it's going to come in plastic, you know, like all of that stuff that I'm complicit in. And I've kind of got to own up to my kids at some point and go, yeah, I was partly responsible. I tried my best. I, like, separated all my recycling and I tried my best to not, at 11 p.m. at night when I'm bored at home during a global pandemic, scrolling through the internet, just buy shit I didn't need. Like, but I did, you know.
It's hard. It's hard because we know who the companies are that are genuinely most responsible for these things. We know the decisions that were made by governments at strategic times to fuck the planet over in the States, you know, like, and yes, we do all have personal responsibility, and yes, we can try as hard as we can, and that is really important. But the problem I have, I think, is that I'm not going to really be able to not say to my children, the demand for revolutionary action is here. The fascists are upon us. And, you know, I don't want them to have to be like that. Like, my most nervous things are, I feel like I fought as hard as I possibly could for the last two elections to try and overturn a pretty authoritarian government. And I lost. And I don't know what to do next on a grand scale. But luckily as well, the best thing about activism is it's never just down to you, is it? Except for Greta Thunberg, she's got to keep going. But like, on the whole, no, but there are always other people you can look around and be like, okay, they're inspiring, I can help them. This person's doing this. So, I don't know. What's it? Resignation and cynicism are the things that we must not fall into, no matter what.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Whenever she asks me to explain stuff, I'm very quick. Like, it's almost like I'm performing to a hidden audience in the room. Like, my jadedness and my cynicism might end up in that explanation. She might literally ask, like, why does that man not have a house? And I might go, oh, fucking government housing crisis. Like, you know, like, constantly check myself so that I'm explaining the world to her that's free of my own shit. And I find find that really hard. And I've also noticed that, like, you know, my dynamic with me and my sisters is just to take the absolute piss out of each other at all times. Like, our relationship is just rinsing each other. You know, it's literally like, hey guys, oh, it's guys, is it? You know, oh, it's hey, is it? You know, like, whatever, you just find any chink in the armor and you'll take it down. And I've noticed I was trying to do that with my kids. Like, I was being sarcastic with them, or I was being like, you know, when you, like, tell a dumb lie, like, I can't think of an example. Like, oh, daddy, you're going to the toilet? No, I'm getting into my spaceship. Are you really? You know, like, and I've been really, like, watching myself, because I feel like they both feed into the same sort of cynicism that I feel about the world. And actually ensuring that I'm looking at the world through their eyes means that I can explain the world to them better.
Yes, completely. And also, it's so rare and so beautiful. Like, even the difference between my 2-year-old daughter and my 6-year-old niece as to where they are in terms of developing a certain worldly wisdom is so much for me that it like hurts me. Like, I keep having to say to myself, I'm only going to have a 2-year-old for another 6 months. And it is so beautiful to be around someone who just takes everything as it is and takes everyone as it is and is so excited and so thrilled by small things and so engaged with the world and connected to it in that way. And yeah, like, I'm the opposite. I'm so fucking over earnest that I worry I'm too earnest. I worry that my daughter will be like me, which is like I do, like, there are some people that I really like mucking around with, but like when friends make like a harsh joke to me, I'm always a bit like, I mean, it does hurt a bit, but I need to just grow up a little bit, you know? And that's friends, you know. I'm so sensitive, and so I feel like I'm in coming the other way, where I need to just try and relax enough. If I see someone say something offhand to her or something, like another kid, I have to just be like, no, she's resilient, it's okay. But yeah, it's definitely, but I suppose again, when we think about climate change, that's what's so heartbreaking, is they're so in tune with nature in a very beautiful way. They're very sort of, will sit and examine a leaf like they're on mushrooms, or will like talk to the ants, you know, it will treat everything around them like it's, will cuddle trees and stuff. So that can be heartbreaking. But yeah, I think it is important. And it's important for us as adults, because that's such a beautiful relief for us. It's a relief for you not to have to feel cynicism and to let yourself be your little inner child for a bit, without sounding too wanky. But do you know what I mean? Like, just to let yourself come like falteringly out of your shield of armour and be like, yes, the apple does look like it's smiling at us, you know.
and also, like, you know, your kids end up mirroring your own worries and anxieties. So yeah, if you express fear about climbing up a tree, then they will automatically express that fear in some way as well. I remember walking along a like a beach promenade once, and my eldest kid just bent down and picked something up and walked over and plopped it in over the side into the sea. And I realized as she was walking over that she was holding a crab. I was like, what are you like be careful. But she had just seen this crab that got stranded on the promenade. She was worried it was going to get trodden on, and with no fear she picked it up and like returned it to the sea. And that it kind of taught me a lesson about how kids don't necessarily see fear until you show them that it's something to be fearful of. And, you know, currently both my kids are really scared of wolves, because wolves are so prominent in like cartoons and, you know, Disney, and like, you know, wolves are like the big source of fear. And so they don't have any like practical need to be scared of wolves, because we don't live in the Black Forest or anything. But
that's the other thing. We can't shield them from like other people's weird bullshit that's gonna just map onto them. That is like, I feel so desperate to protect her from everything.
Yeah.
Except the film Moana, which is genuinely, I feel like it's come into my life from heaven, because it's a Disney princess film that I don't mind, that I think is feminist, where the baddie, it's just a big woman who's angry and needs a cuddle. The big woman's angry. She just needs a cuddle. It's teaching her that when I'm angry, I just need a cuddle.
I
have a lot of things I want to protect her from in that way and not have her influenced by. But this is interesting. When I was a kid, I was terrified of nuclear war. And I believed, and this is where I was a child and did not understand these things, I believed there would be a nuclear war that I would be conscripted into fighting, even though I was a 7-year-old girl.
Fighting for or against? Or like,
oh, in the throng.
Yeah.
In the mushroom cloud. So this is why the reason I brought this up, that was such a deep fear of mine. And I don't know whether it came via my parents or via the world around me.
Right.
And so in some ways, it's so brutal to know we can't protect them from the overarching discourse and what that may or may not do to them. I do know that my mum, when I was 2 or 3, used to make me say intercontinental ballistic missile. And I don't think that helped. Isn't that like a grim 80s parent joke? To be like, say intercontinental ballistic missile, tiny toddler.
is that before you do your debate, your like on school, like warm-up exercises?
Intercontinental
ballistic missile. Yeah, it does exercise your mouth. Maybe she was just prepping you for
my teenage debating career.
Yeah, stop the nuclear war. I do not want this intercontinental ballistic missile to be launched.
This house believes.
God, yeah, that house still believes it. They're still doing this. Okay, so
listen, that fucking house. That house is too whimsical and too happy to entertain devil's advocates.
And that house opens out onto a marketplace of ideas. So just to finish up.
I'm sorry I've been so rangy. I love talking.
I've had a great time. We've covered a lot of ground. Every now and then we've gone, no, we need to bring it back to climate change because that was the topic that we mooted as potential discussion.
Okay, this is my short summary about, should we be afraid? I don't know whether fear is helpful, but we should probably appreciate the fact that we have been let down massively by government and that ordinary people are being asked of a lot. Does that mean it's a bad idea to have kids? No fucking way. It's always a wonderful idea to have kids, and we need joy and we need new people to solve problems, and it's wonderful, right? There we go.
Yeah. That is the message that I want to go out on. Keep banging, guys. Keep banging and banging out.
Lads, lasses, and anyone who's neither of those, you fuck away, okay? Fuck away. And think of your aunt and uncle over here just giving you a cheerful wink.
Yeah. You know, treat every day like it's Tuesday afternoon during a pandemic. And I also think
all of these things do come down to, oh, I just heard that as I was speaking, and you know, I'm proud of you, but I do feel like that some of this is going to boil down to who a person is and what temperament they have, and I will genuinely always be someone for whom hope springs eternal and always be someone who is hoping for better and wanting there to be better. And on top of that, I will always be someone who in general has good vibes about people but bad vibes about power.
I really feel like if there was a nuclear war tomorrow, then we would be the perfect, you know, buddy cop, like two different people, because you'd be the hopeful one who just really wants to keep everyone going, and I'd be the really jaded one going, well, what's the point, you know, we're all gonna die. should we just give up now? And you'll be like,
but also, exactly, there are some people in the 90s who were miserable in the 90s. They were in the 90s. What do you have to worry about in the 90s, you know? And there's gonna be people who are miserable now. It's just how it is.
What were they miserable at in the 90s? How their fantasy...
Yeah, they were just kind of bored, I think.
How their fantasy football team was doing. Whether the Oasis B-side was going to have Noel or Liam on lead vote. I don't know. Okay, just to finish, one that you can share and not one that is potentially going to lead to future prosecution, but what has been your biggest parenting fail?
Oh, my biggest parenting fail? Oh, let me think.
Mine, and I don't think I've even shared this on the podcast yet. Mine was, I was at the top of the stairs holding my baby, tweeting.
Oh, it's a great start.
Yeah, tweeting, and I slipped on a library book. You know, library books have those like dust covers, a very slippery one, and I dropped her out of my hands, but I managed to capture just before her head smashed against the stairs.
Oh. And
it was, I might even edit this out because just a look on your face. I did catch her.
No, but that's the fear. That's the fear. It's not a judgment. It's fear on your behalf. You caught her. There's a thing called moral luck, you know?
Yeah.
If the worst had happened, you'd have been unlucky and it would have seemed worse than it was. But the best happened. So therefore, it's all right.
Tweet away, my friend. Tweet away at the top of the stairs, halfway up the stairs.
No harm, no foul.
Double jeopardy.
I think my most parenting fail, it will be. So my daughter woke up every 45 minutes for about 6 months. And you'll remember because you were my dear friend who helped me through it and sort of looked after me a bit through it. And there was one time when I do remember it really got to me, and just putting the baby down in the sort of nest cot thing and just sort of turning the other way and just howling, just like, like the most primal, like, and hitting, she was not on the bed, she was on a cot, and I was facing away from her, but hitting the side of the bed, like, why, God, why? And I think that was definitely my lowest point, and it did feel like failing, but, I mean, mine are more, like, insidious, mine are like, she watches too much TV, all the time.
What was the most useless bit of advice that you ever got?
Oh, wow. If you're calm, they'll be calm. If you're just a calm person...
That's so rubbish.
If you... Listen, the calmer you are, the more they'll sleep. Oh, yeah. I'll tell you something for free. Calmness did not fix silent fucking reflux, okay? Me being calm didn't chill that out, all right? Calmer you are. I was fucking... That was calm.
That is rubbish. Yeah. That is so rubbish. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was real.
I think one of my ones was sleep when the baby sleeps. No, like, no.
How? And also what? Sleep for 20 minutes? Great. With the baby on you?
In that 20 minutes, the baby's asleep, I could have a shit by myself. I could have a shower. I could maybe wash some...
Have a cup of tea and it'll be hot.
Wash some dishes. Like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the only time you've got to do literally everything else.
Yeah, such rubbish advice. I guess it only really works for people who have nannies or butlers or something. I don't know.
Listen, sleep when the butler sleeps, yeah, okay? Take your lead from the staff. If the staff are sleeping, get down, get some chat eye. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Josie. I feel a lot calmer about impending climate catastrophe and climate collapse, because let's just fill the internet with more stuff.
We're all already on this earth. We don't want to live in Children of Men where there's no young people whatsoever. And I don't know. We just all keep trying. And we just all keep trying to do the best we can under difficult circumstances. Look, we're going to have a laugh no matter what, so don't worry about it. Have a laugh. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Sometimes I think it's worth acknowledging when things are overwhelming and feeling that grief, but also feeling the multitude of other feelings and still trying to be useful and do what you can.
Thank you, Josie. Thanks so much. Bye.
That's all right. I'm sorry to be all over the place.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast over the last 16 weeks. I hope it's been a comfort for you. Thank you to all of my listeners, especially those who've got in touch. It means the world to me. Thank you to all of my guests, all 16 of you. You've been amazing. To Bluebird, thank you for the support, especially my editor, Carol. Carol, she listens to this and she's going to be like, who is Carol? Carol, my publicist, Jess, and my marketing manager, Sean. Thank you to Acast, especially to Clarissa and John for the additional support. So I'm taking a month break. I will be back with season 2 at the end of May. And it's going to be just as good. I've started recording some of those episodes already, so I can tell you that season 2 will feature Shobhna Gulati, Sarah Collins, Andy Oliver, Lenny Henry, Ben Bailey-Smith, and many, many more to come. Keep subscribed, keep your eyes on the feed, leave a review, buy the book. See you in season 2. Goodbye, my friends. Goodbye.
Brown baby, I am brown baby. Yes, I am. Silly brown baby.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.